The Murthy Law Firm has been clarifying US immigration laws and procedures for foreign nationals since 1994. Teleconferences and podcasts were added to the resources available online in 2012. We are happy to offer this free service. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Hello, this is a podcast on the best practices for a successful admission to the United States as a student in F1 status. I am Anna Stepanova, an attorney and assistant managing attorney at the Murthy Law Firm. And I'm joined today by the managing attorney at Murthy India, an affiliate of the Murthy Law Firm, Senthil Kumar, who is based in Chennai, India, and also my colleague, an attorney and a member of the Murthy Law Firm, Joel Yanovich. This podcast has been recorded on August 30th, 2023, and we are producing this podcast in association with Telugu Association of North America. This time of year, around the start of a new school year, we typically hear about various issues that new incoming international students experience at the United States consulates abroad, when they apply for an F1 visa, and also at Customs and Border Protection ports of entry when they usually fly into the U.S. Sometimes they cross the border from Canada and Mexico, but normally the CBP ports are located at major international airports. In this podcast, we will discuss some best practices to avoid potential issues that may happen either at the consulate or at CBP, Customs and Border Protection, or both, and how to avoid some roadblocks on the way to a successful academic career in the United States. So typically, a journey to become a student at a U.S. university or college begins with applying for admission to one of or even several universities in the U.S. There is no issue with applying to more than one school at a time. It's pretty common. When you apply for admission, you need to read all of the instructions for international students on the school's website. Just something to bear in mind that in addition to simply applying for admission as a regular student, you will also have to apply for and complete some additional steps in the process as a student applying from abroad. So the first thing that you will do, again, apply for admission. Once you are admitted into an academic program of study, you will also need to be issued a form I-20. So this is a form that once issued is not going to give you status of visa, but you will need it to apply for a visa at a consulate, U.S. consulate abroad. When you apply for an I-20 form, you will only be eligible if you have been admitted for a full course of study. It cannot be a conditional admission. It only has to be a full course of study. Most programs will require that you show your English language proficiency, and what's very important, your financial ability to meet all of the expenses. And usually it means that you have enough money to show to last you the first year of the program, but you also have some sources for future support, financial support, to finish your program successfully. And once you obtain an I-20, that will typically be sent to you by the school's designated school official, which is an international student advisor. Then once you have that, you can go ahead and complete form DS-160, which is a kind of a general form for applying for a non-immigrant visa, including an F1 visa. And then you will schedule an appointment at a U.S. consulate. And Senthil is going to speak more about the consular processing of the F1 visa and what to look for. Once you schedule an appointment, you appear for an interview, and then hopefully a visa will be issued and you can travel to the U.S. Okay, and Joel Yanovich is going to speak more about what to be aware of when you land at a U.S. airport or goes through a port of entry, a land port of entry, what to expect, what to be aware of, and all other issues to assure successful admission into the U.S. Once you are in the U.S., you need to report to your school, because if you fail to report to the school, based on the visa, the school name should appear on your visa stamp, as well as the I-20 that you traveled with. Then if you don't report to the school, you want to report to another school, you will be in violation of status. So only the school that with which I-20 you applied for the visa, you need to report to. And finally, in order to learn more about what to do, what not to do, what to be aware of, you need to attend a new international student orientation at the school when you report to the school. So I will pass it on to Senthil Kumar, who is going to talk more about the preparation for a visa interview.
Thank you, Anna, and thank you, Joel. So I'm excited to be on this forum and talk to you all about the visa application process for students. When you're applying for a visa, I know that students will be very, apprehensive of what to expect, and they'll be, and when they have to go to the interview, a lot of people say that they were not able to answer properly because they were very nervous. So we're going to talk about the application process and what to watch for and why you shouldn't be nervous at the interview, because if you are going to be honest and state the facts, there's nothing that you need to worry about, because the officer is going to be there to help you get into the United States. All they're going to do is make sure that you're a legitimate student and you have gotten admission into a good university and that's relevant to what you've studied. And if it's not relevant to what you've studied, then you have a reason why you're moving to a different course and you have adequate financial resources. So this is all they're going to do, and they're waiting to give you a visa. So once you know that, it should calm your mind and you should be able to present yourself better. So, but all said and done, it's your life, it's your future. So, so we will talk about the do's and don'ts and what to watch for, and when applying the application process, some students also seek help from educational consultants. While some are really good, there's nothing wrong in doing that, because when there is a big process and the whole, right from the statement of purpose to getting the I-20, it's not an easy process, and that it's always good to have guidance, but it's important to have the right guidance because you should know whom you're taking help from. So we'll talk about some of the tips and the things that you need to watch out when you're taking help from educational consultants for admission. And, sometimes if you take help with the application process, you also need to know what you need to watch for. First, talking about the admission process when you're taking help from an education consultant. First, you have to see if the consultant is a legitimate one. There is no hard and fast rule to find which consultant is legitimate and which is not. If they are affiliated to good universities, and if you have a recommendation from the university, or if they are listed as a certified consultant from the universities, or if you attended education fair organized by the USIEF, there is United States India Education Foundation, which is part of the consulate. They conduct education fair. So if you're going through those channels and you know for sure that the education is reliable, education consultant is reliable, then that is a good sign. And sometimes when you are in doubt, you can talk to the DSO also to see if they are affiliated, because if they claim to be affiliated and if they're not, you should probably talk to school authorities to see if the consultant is, affiliated. Just because the consultant is affiliated or not doesn't mean that they are good or bad. So in all said and done, you have to use your due diligence. And how do you do that? If there is a consultant who comes and advises you right from the statement of purpose to say something that is incorrect just for purpose of getting an admission. And, you have to watch out for that, because you have to be very clear and honest, and they can help you present your fact, but they should not state something which is incorrect. Similarly, when you're applying for the I-20, there is the financial resources need to be submitted. Here again, as long as you are using your financial resources, you know, that is fine. But if the consultant offers, you know, financial resources at a fee, then you should know that that is fraud. And, you know, that by itself is fraud, and it could shut all doors to the United States. It's not just going to be a refusal of that particular application for a visa. It will shut down all the doors to the United States. So you have to be very careful, you know, and make sure that you state the right things and, you know, and you carry only legitimate documents. So if you have this basics right, that you're going to be honest, you're going to use only documentation which you are aware of, and you know, you're going to any financial resource that you presented, you know that it is from the sponsor. It can be your parent, it can be your family member or a family friend, or if you have a brother or sister living in the United States, it can be them. So, but you just have to make sure it is from them, and that is the only document that you're carrying, because if there is anything other than that, that could lead to trouble.
And Senthil, I just wanted to mention that the showing of financial ability to pay for the school, and which is supported by financial documents, is a requirement, not just at the visa interview, but as I mentioned earlier, that would also be a requirement when you first apply to the school. So it's something that in usually would be consistent, right? The same financial documents you present to the school would need to be presented with regard to the visa interview. They don't have to be exactly the same, but of course, you know, it's something that if happens shortly thereafter, I mean, the visa application, they better be consistent with what you showed to the school to begin with.
I agree. That's very important, because many times we see that there are a lot of funds that just pumped into the account just before the interview, and then, you know, they pull it out as soon as it is done. So what happens is we need to make sure that the finances are consistent, like Anna told. And, you know, when going for the visa interview, the officers may or may not even look at the financial resources. However, it is important that we carry the right documentation. And even at the port of entry, we see that sometimes the financial resources that are shown here are not shown there. And it's totally different, then that causes a lot of trouble. So we need to make sure that they're consistent. That's a very important point. And
Senthil, can you give examples of what consultants typically suggest that students show, so that we can put it in some specific context?
Okay, so what happens is for the finances of, you know, the first year, like you said, we need to show that the funds are available in liquid funds readily, and for the subsequent years, we need to show that funds are available in a liquefiable format, right? So typically for the first year, if they can show it in their savings bank account or fixed deposits in the name of the sponsors or in the name of the student, that is good, because that can be liquidated anytime and move. So that is a good, you know, acceptable form of funds. And for the subsequent years, if the parents or the sponsor have an income which is more than the requirement for the education, for example, and let's assume that $40,000 is what is required, and parents put together, they make about $100,000, then we can show that as, you know, sufficient, you know, resources for the subsequent year. However, if they're...
And what would be one of the red flags? I know that when we were discussing this podcast a couple of days ago, you mentioned that some consultants offer, you know, to offer a loan, for example, to a student. That would be a red flag, right?
Oh, yes, that is. Because especially if the consultants offer, you know, to provide financial documentation like a bank statement or, you know, a loan approval from some bank, you know, at the fee, then they should avoid those things. Because if at all they have a loan, it should be through their own resources, applying to the bank for an educational loan and having it. It should not be from anyone else. Because and some consultants take some money, deposit some money into the bank, get a statement, give it to them, and afterwards they withdraw the money. So the money may not even be actually lying in the bank account when they're applying for the visa. So never take such help from anyone for that matter, not just the consultant, because they should have whatever funds that I've shown should be actually available for you to take with you to the United States. And it's perfectly okay to have a bank loan, because a lot of people, assume, the students assume that having a bank loan is going to be a red flag. That is not the case. So as long as you are able to show, and if there's any question related to how you're going to repay the loan, as long as you have resources to do that, then it's perfectly fine to have a loan. And another thing that I see with the consultant is, if you have a brother or sister living in the US, many of these consultants say, hey, don't mention about your brother or sister, because it's going to affect the outcome of the visa. In fact, the brother or sister may be working in the US, and they might have an income in US dollars, and they'll be willing to sponsor, which is going to help the applicant. But based on this advice, some students provide incorrect information, and that ends up in ineligibility.
Fenthil, can you also speak for a moment about the DS-160? Because that it seems like the one document that we know the consular officers are going to see is the DS-160. Everything else, the forms that were provided, we don't even know that they're going to look at them.
Yes, you're right. So when applying for the visa, right, or the A visa for that matter, especially for a student, the consular officer will be looking at the DS-160 for sure, and any information that goes into the DS-160 form will be reviewed by the officer. And secondly, they talk to the applicant, and then based upon the response provided by the applicant, they make a decision. They also look at the I-20. These are the three documents which the officers commonly look at for the interview. So the DS-160 should have accurate information. Anything which is inaccurate would lead to trouble later. So there are means to add some additional information on the application form. For example, if a student is completed the undergrad year and is going to get admission in the United States, currently they'll be unemployed. So they can put mark as not employed, and there'll be a box. Checkbox that opens, and they can provide about their financial resources on the application form. And if they have a brother or sister, then they have to mention about it. If they had a prior refusal, they need to mention about it. So if they've lost the passport, they need to mention about it. Everything that is asked for on the application form DS-160 is done for a reason, and the officers will use that information to make a decision on the applicant. So we cannot assume and provide what the officers would like to see and provide that information. We have to only provide accurate information.
Also, Santal, that kind of reminded me, speaking of DS-160 and all the best tips, sometimes, and consultants for that matter, so sometimes they tell the student to change their major, or because they think that it would increase their chances, but it's not the case, right? That it would increase their chances for getting a visa, because they really don't want, that major. They want another major. And what a student may plan for is to immediately change their major when they travel to the U.S. But that is also a red flag, right? When a consultant tells you that you should have a major that's different from what you really want to do.
That's very true. So what happens is, they try, because they get commission from sometimes the university or, from the student themselves based upon the number of I-20s they get, right? So these consultants sometimes push the students to a different course, which originally they may not even be interested, just because they would stand a better chance in getting an admission. They'll say, okay, once you go there, you can change and all that stuff. But what happens is, we've seen that some students who come to the United States, they find it very difficult to cope up in the first semester. They fall out. They're not able to maintain their status. And then they have to come back, and then they get admission somewhere else, and then they get into trouble at the port of entry. So it's very important that you choose the course of your choice, not the consultant's choice. So they can help you present your case better, but not help, make a decision on choosing a course which you really do not want to pursue in the US. The focus should be on the education, and you know, and it should not be on getting a visa. So that is more important, because when your focus is right, then automatically you're going to present everything accurately and you're going to get it. So that is what the students need to remember. And financial assistance with documentation, again, is something that they should never take, because as I told you, that is a major flag, because you know, they get some letters from the bank, they present it, and that's enough for them to shut down all the roads to the US. So that they should never ever do that. So choosing the right course is important, choosing the right university. If you know that there's a better university, if the consultant is pushing you to a university which is not that good in the ranking, you should check on reliable resources. You can visit the USIEF and try to see what you know, they have to say, because they are there to guide you, and they may be able to provide you in the right direction. So it's important to take you know, advice from legitimate sources when in doubt.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't know if this Central, do you have more? You want
to? Okay, one other thing that I'd like to add here is about the questions at the, you know, at the visa interview. Because most, you know, students would like to discuss about them, but even if they come to you as an attorney, whatever you say, they'll say, hey, I read this on the forum, I read this, you know, my consultant told me this, or my, you know, my friend said this. So they go to the net, and there's so much of resources available on the internet, and they get so confused, and they always try to think, you know, they have to answer what the officer would like to hear, okay? Which is not the way to do it. They may have a brother or a relative living in a particular town which would have, you know, influenced them to pick up that university. But then they'll say, oh, you know, this course is very good, the university is very good, and, you know, the professor is good, you know, and they may have admission from a better university. So if they tell that, hey, my brother lives there, and, you know, that is why I you know, wanted to choose this university. I know that, you know, there are other universities, but I don't want to fall for sick, but I feel that this offers all the requirements that I have, and, you know, and the proximity to the family is very important for me, and I want to choose this. If they're perfectly fine with it. So you have to be honest in answering questions. Don't try to give tailored or tutored answers. So that I will then I would just like to give the floor to you. And if there's anything else I need to add, always let me know.
All right. Well, let me provide some information about the port of entry, because this is important. I think it's oftentimes overlooked. Once people get the visa, they think, okay, that's basically it, and that's not really the case. So some basics, the soonest you can generally enter is 30 days prior to the start date of your program. That will typically be indicated on your Form I-20 that will say earliest admission date. Your visa, so when you're presenting your visa, it should have the same name of the school as what's on your I-20. So keep that in mind. And that's the among other than the visa at the port of entry, you're also going to need to provide, obviously, your valid passport, the I-20 that's been signed by the designated school officer, the DSO. If you have the admission or acceptance letters, bring that, your I-901 CVS fee payment receipt. And this is important, document proof of your financial support. So if you're asked about that, you will have the evidence and be able to answer any questions about that. As a side note, if you don't have an I-20, technically speaking, they can still admit you, and they can give you a special form that you can then go get the I-20 and bring it back to CBP within 30 days. Obviously, that's not recommended, and it doesn't necessarily mean they will admit you, but technically speaking, that is possible under the right circumstances. When you get to the port of entry, be prepared to answer basic questions. This is not about memorizing a script. These tend to be questions that you should be able to answer without really having to memorize anything. If you don't know the answer to a question, you can say, I don't know, or you can ask them for clarification if you're a little bit confused about what they're asking. That is much better than either guessing what you think they want to hear, or giving them some kind of prearranged script ahead of time. It's very likely going to get you into trouble. Obviously, be respectful, be cooperative. Ultimately, the officers, Customs and Border Protection, CBP, the CBP officers at the port of entry have tremendous discretion. you are not in the U.S., even though you may have landed at a U.S. airport, you are not technically admitted into the U.S. until they clear you and admit you. So if they don't want to admit you, they pretty much have almost complete discretion to not do so. At the port of entry, they will typically ask some basic questions. If they have additional concerns, if they have additional questions, they want to do, check more about you, about your intent, et cetera, they will typically take you into secondary inspection. So secondary inspection is basically a separate area where they have the opportunity to spend more time questioning you, reviewing your information, et cetera. Now, just to be clear, if they're going to not admit you to the U.S., usually the first thing they will do is take you to secondary inspection. However, just because you were taken a secondary inspection does not mean you're not going to be admitted. It's not at all unusual to go into secondary inspection and answer the questions, and they're satisfied and they let you in. So when you go in, don't assume everything is done and don't put your head down and look guilty like you did something. If you did everything you were supposed to, answer the questions, be cooperative with the understanding that they're just looking at additional information. They can and routinely will inspect your electronic devices. They will look at your phone. They'll look at your laptop. If you've prepared on there a script, even if it's all truthful information, it may look suspicious. It may look like you're trying to hide something or trying to deceive them. So keep that in mind. Anything you have on there, any email or text message or WhatsApp messages you had, they may see them. So keep that in mind. If they do pull you into secondary inspection, answer truthfully. You should be able to answer questions like, what school are you attending? Why did you apply to that school? Why did you choose that school and not another one? Did you apply elsewhere? And then a big one, of course, is the financials. You should be able to explain to them briefly where the money is from and how you obtained it, and hopefully have documents to support that. And they may very well ask about, did you use a consultant? If you used a consultant, tell the truth. And as Senthil explained in detail, one of the things you're going to do ahead of time is try to make sure you're going with a legitimate consultant. So if you used a consultant, tell the truth, but keep that in mind when you're answering the question, did they tell you what to say? Well, if they told you what to say, that's probably not the right consultant to be using. They're supposed to be giving you tips and help you understand what kind of questions to expect, not to give you a script on what you should say that's always going to work. Because I promise you, you may be the 12th person that day that is given the same answers, and they're going to be ready for it. One last tip, if everything goes poorly, if the officer decides that you are not going to be admitted, they have the discretion to issue an expedited removal order. There's an expedited removal order. That means you're going to be barred from admission for at least 5 years, automatically barred. If that happens, if they look like they're doing that, you can at least ask for voluntary departure. Voluntary departure, you're still going...
You mean withdrawal, Joe.
I'm sorry, withdrawal, excuse me. You're still not going to be admitted to the U.S., but you won't carry with you that automatic bar from reentry. Not ideal. That's not the outcome you want. But obviously, withdrawing that request for admission is going to be preferable to an expedited removal, which is essentially as if you were deported. It's just an expedited, much lower bar for deportation proceedings. So this is something you obviously, hopefully, does not come to that. And if you do what we've suggested here, much lower chance of any of that happening. But ultimately, you don't really have any legal rights at the port of entry. You don't have a right to legal representation. They can let you get in touch with someone if they've held you for a couple of hours or more, but that doesn't mean that the officer has to listen to the attorney or speak with your attorney or anything along those lines. So these are all things you want to get, because ultimately, most people who come here on F1s are admitted without issue. If you did everything properly ahead of time, the chances that you're going to be removed are going to be substantially less. If you didn't get tied in with some consultant that's doing shady work that maybe they're familiar with, those types of activities.
So the bottom line is tell the truth and be consistent. Don't accept advice that is kind of against what you know to be true. And you should be okay, right? Send
That's true. Yeah. So yeah, you hit the nail on the head. So just be honest. Make sure that you carry the right documentation and do not provide, fall for anybody who just gives you an easy way out. There is no easy way out. You have to just go with the facts. And if you get it, you get it. If you don't, it can always be applied for a visa. And while applying, at the interview, with the consulate, the officer will be looking at what university you're going to, why you chose the university, why you chose the course, and you have the sufficient resources. So as long as you're prepared with enough information to address this, you should be good. And like what Joel said, the consistency is very important. What you presented at the time of getting the I-20 admission into the school, what you're presenting at the consulate to get the visa, and what you're presenting at the port of entry. As long as you're being honest and consistent and carry the legitimate documents, you should be okay.
Hopefully the information we provided to you today is useful to you, and hopefully you will have a very successful academic and professional career, and you can study at the school of your choice, you can pursue your passion, get a degree, and be successful in life. So we hope it was of value to you.
This is a free service. The content is the protected copyrighted property of the Murthy Law Firm. Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.murthy.com.